Oh hey, didn't see you there. Welcome to Secondary Fermentation, episode number 76. Oh look, it's Nick.
76. Nick's. Nick's back.
Stevie Nicks.
Stevie Nicks. Pick up sticks.
Bunch of hicks. We're here. This is Joe. That's Nick.
It's Nick, yep.
Lauren's not here.
No LC.
You know, last time she wasn't here and we said something about her shrill, annoying voice, you know, she sent us a text and said, wow, that was rude. And, you know, we clarified. We're like, oh, you were listening to the episode? And she's like, oh, I accidentally started listening to it. And I thought that was incredibly rude. I was like, I can't believe you accidentally started listening to your own podcast.
Yeah, I might have felt bad about our joke if she had listened on purpose, but I felt a little bit less bad about it.
Now we're justified in our actions.
So in case she accidentally listens again to this episode, I'll see if you've made it this far. We didn't say shrill and annoying. We said chill and enjoying.
Yeah, that's exactly what we said. So chill. But Elsie's a little under the weather, so it's just the two dudes.
We're over the weather.
We're over the weather. I'm so over this
weather. I'm over this weather. This weather's trash.
It's trash.
It actually has been kind of trash.
You know what was good weather? When we went to Wilmington this last weekend. Ooh.
Well,
me and
we and
LC.
You and LC, yeah.
Yeah, LC, I, and the little bebe went out for just kind of a overnight trip to Wilmington.
Ooh, yeah.
Got to get some delicious brunch at a place called Savor Southern Kitchen.
Savor.
Got some delicious food. Then we went to hit up some breweries, as you should always do in Wilmington.
As you should.
So we stopped at New Anthem, their Dock Street location, and it just so happens we picked up a 4-pack to go, and Nick's got one in his hand right now.
Wow.
Crack that beer. Oh, yeah. What you got there, Nick?
We are pouring up a can of their Hazy Yellow Porch Light, which is a hazy IPA.
Yellow, it's a porch light. Beautiful, beautiful sound.
She is hazy.
New Anthem Brewing, known for their IPAs. They've got some delicious, especially some delicious hazies. You know, when we went, the Dock Street location is pretty cool. I don't think I had actually been there before. I had been to the Greenfield location, which is like their newer, bigger facility. The Dock Street location is pretty cool. It's a little smaller, but very nice, like, vibe.
Oh, it's super cool. It's like the bar, if I remember, kind of like wraps around the center. They've got some like bright tanks. It's got like just a little bit of an industrial feel, but it's like with a...
But like with a... It's
with
like
taste. It's like...
And like a nautical... Like like a subtle nautical vibe. And the ceiling is kind of cool because it's like an arch. Like the whole ceiling is kind of like an arch.
And it's got that like garage door that can open up when it's, when the weather's nice.
Yeah, and that was open.
Yeah.
It was a vibe.
Which I feel like without that open, it's really easy to miss. Because when we went there, Jen and I stopped there when we were in Wilmington once. And we went by it, and I think we were confused because if not for a little like pitch-up sign that had like a chalk menu or like a schedule of events that said New Anthem, we were like, oh, it's here. It was just a door and the garage was closed, and so like the only way to know that we were there was there was just a door that didn't seem to have any...
Was the sign above?
I think it was up above. And so it was like, oh, we almost missed it, but with the door open then you get the full peek inside. The garage door open, you can see like inside, and it's just a really cool spot. It's like good for live music, I imagine.
And
it's a little more intimate than the other location, but yeah, I think that was their original location for brewing, too. And they might still do most of the brewing there.
Yeah, there's pretty, like, in the back, you can kind of barely see it packed through, but there's some big equipment in there. I had a good beer there. I had, it's like a West Coast Keller Pils. It was
a Keller Pils,
yeah, and it had, like, it was kind of hoppy, and it was good. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I can imagine that. A nice Keller with some hop addition there. Give you a little bit of bitterness.
Lauren had their Encasat. I can't remember if it was Eldorado edition or something like that, but it was good. Then we picked up this four pack. This is, like Nick said, hazy yellow porch light, hazy IPA. Super balanced. You know, it's not over the top juicy, not over the top dank or anything like that. Just like refreshing, but you still like juicy, flavorful, just pretty delicious.
Oh yeah. Really smooth.
What's the ABV on this one?
6.5.
Okay. So, yeah. Good. Like a nice ABV.
Very moderate, yep.
Mouth feels pretty, you know, even keeled. And then a slight bitter finish, which is nice. It's not, reminds you that it's an IPA.
Yeah. It starts off with plenty of juice forward flavors. On the nose, it's, you know, really inviting with that. Yeah. Juicy, slightly floral aroma. But yeah, it's definitely finishing with a touch of that bitterness, which you can kind of, you said it like balances it out as an IPA.
Yeah. And when we went to New Anthem, like when we were looking at breweries where to go and kind of planning our trip out as far as like the logistics of going where first, on Instagram, we saw New Anthem like closed today, but it was their Raleigh location. That was on Friday. And then it was, then they posted again, closed throughout the weekend. And then as they're, you know, reading that, there were some rumors that business has not been great for them. And they recently just announced that they're, like the day after we got back, they announced that they're closing their, was it Glenwood location in Raleigh?
Yeah.
Which I didn't even know that was there. I had never been there to that location before.
Yeah, and I think it's just because when we go to Raleigh, we typically have hit other spots that are, you know, like that's their local home base.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're exclusive to Raleigh. You know, there's, you know, New Anthem has done well, obviously, with their market in Wilmington, and then they've distributed pretty widely in the state of North Carolina, but yeah, definitely didn't make it to the Raleigh location. So I don't know if they're going to be able to bounce back. It sounds like they're kind of indefinitely closing unless they can somehow get some miracle to sustain themselves. But yeah, they cited some issues with, you know, a brewery opening kind of like during / post COVID pandemic, and just the ramifications were not all resolved by this point. Like they've had a lot of financial hardship struggling from those side effects of the pandemic, and it's really tough because they're not alone in that regard. Other breweries have cited similar things and just not been able to make it. And we are just kind of seeing a little bit of a regression in, you know, the industry as it tends to ebb and flow. I think we're kind of seeing a little bit of that, that ebb now.
I feel like it's like all the time I'm seeing, you know, this brewery files for chapter 11, this brewery files chapter 11. It's kind of like becoming more and more common. And like you said, yeah, I think we're hitting a little bit of a slump right now. I don't know what it is. You think as things open back up and stuff starts to relax, you know, like the CDC just cut back their guidelines saying, you know, you don't have to quarantine for 5 days if you got COVID. You just want to wait 24 hours after your last, like, unmedicated, not your fever broke without taking any meds. So you think, like, things would start going, and maybe they will, but I mean, I will say, even when we visited New Anthem, that Dock Street location, we went at about 2 o'clock on a Saturday and we were the only people in there. So we, I was like, oh, did they just open or like, are they closed? But, no, it just was us. And by the time we were leaving, the baby was getting a little hungry and fussy. So we only had one beer and got the four pack and had to get out of there. But at that time, like only one other dude had come in, and I was like, man, this is crazy because this is New Anthem. Like,
it's right,
one of the heavy hitters and one of the well-known ones. So hopefully their Greenfield Street location was popping, and maybe just the time of day was not their optimal.
Yeah, and the it says Greenfield Street. I can't remember which one that is. I know it's the bigger one.
I think it's Greenfield, unless I've been saying it wrong the whole time.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. Yeah, I know the last time that we were in Wilmington, we stopped there when we were there in the fall sometime, did like a day trip down to Wilmington, and that location, we definitely weren't the only ones there. It was nice enough to sit outside, which was cool about that location. So it may be that if the weather is nice, maybe people flock to somewhere with like a patio. That's
and it's not that reasonable. Far away from the from the Dock Street one. I mean, the Dock Street one's more centrally located in like the downtown kind of more, not like, I guess, touristy type of area. Whereas the Greenfield one's just like down the street a little bit outside of that limit. So,
yeah. I don't know if I kind of wonder if there's now a bit of a downward trend or a pulling back of people frequenting breweries or going out as often as we did kind of when post-pandemic things were opening up to the public again. You were allowed to come and like sit somewhere and like have a beer versus pulling up for the curbside crowler pickup. So I don't know if maybe now that we've had that period where people were kind of overindulging and just making frequent trips, because we were deprived for, you know, over a year, it seemed like, of kind of regular activity at places like that. Maybe now people are dialing it back a touch because, there was such a high influx of it after COVID that, places were doing well and rebounding, I think. And, you know, now people may be more comfortable just getting a four pack to go and enjoying at home. And again, I think with everything, there's going to be kind of the ebb and flow of that. And I don't think we're going to see breweries completely void of clientele anymore, but definitely noticing from time to time now, like even local places just aren't as busy as they were like regularly. They still get, you know, a busy Friday or Saturday, but you know, kind of the usual traffic has slowed down a little bit.
Yeah. I feel like it's more common to be like, go somewhere and be like, wow, I thought there'd be more people here right now.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just kind of a weird feeling.
Yeah. Maybe we'll see as we get closer to summer too.
Like, yeah, there's seasonality with everything too. Like this post holiday thing, you know, I feel like maybe March now we're in March. Maybe things will start kicking back up. Weather gets a little bit less dismal and everything will go on. But
people turn dry January into forget alcohol February. And now they're like,
must drink
March.
More March.
More beer March.
Yeah. But, you know, breweries really do stand the test of time.
I was like, this is a perfect segue.
You know, some of them have been operating for almost 1,000 years, you know. We thought it'd be kind of a fun, interesting topic today to talk about, like, the oldest breweries in the world or, you know, old breweries. And maybe not the brand itself is the oldest thing, but continuous brewing operations at a site. Or close to, as we'll find, you know, a lot of the history is shrouded in mystery.
The history is shrouded in mystery.
Because, you know, there's been various things that have gone at some place. But we kind of want to give a little rundown of some of the thought to be oldest breweries and kind of give some of their dates that they list and other things. But kind of a fun thing. We don't have super old beer. We've got fresh beer. Some of these old breweries, though, you can still buy their stuff very easily. And
And there's a lot of, you know, tradition in those old breweries, too. They really try to uphold the values and the traditional ingredients and brewing methods as much as possible. So some of those, you definitely get a bit of like a time capsule beer, if you will. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, even with really historical beers, we've talked about that a little bit with, you know, some breweries trying to recreate like ancient beers. You know, for example, Dogfish Head has got a series of beers where they, you know, intentionally try to use ingredients to replicate a beer that's,
you know, Midas Touch.
Like, yeah, the Midas Touch, you know, it's.
There's one about like Ninkasi too or something like that, right?
Oh, really?
It was supposed to be. I can't remember, but
yeah, I mean, because we know that there's archaeological evidence that beer has been brewed for thousands of years, even before kind of modern civilization. Mm-hmm. We, you know, just looking at a couple articles, there originally was an idea that it's been at least 5,000 years, and that dates back to, I believe, a dig that they found in China. But then in Israel, there was a site where archaeologists found evidence of brewing done up to maybe 13,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And they kind of cite that could potentially have been the first brewery in the world. They found these like clay pots that had residue of like malt and stuff. And it probably wasn't like beer that we think of beer today. I think they were saying it seem like it'd be more of the consistency of like a porridge. So I'm like, I don't know how you really drink that, but
would you like some beer? You have to chew it.
So yeah, I'm like, how do we know it was actually they were making beer versus just like that was breakfast?
Well, yeah,
it was the first diner 13,000 years ago.
Well, it's funny because it's like you look at the pictures and you're like, how do you you know extrapolate this into beer? And it's like literally they're like, oh, these are like mortars carved into the ground and they found traces of alcohol in them. So I'm like, okay, yeah, maybe they brewed beer or brewed, you know, beer like substance, or was it just a product of like they made bread and then it sat there and fermented?
Yeah,
who knows? But it's funny, it's just like a series of like divots in the ground and they're like, yes, brewery.
Yeah, and these
science.
Yeah, the Smithsonian Magazine, they have an article about it, and they, you know, are quoting the Journal of Archaeological Science. But yeah, like the residue analysis, you know, really is indicative of all the different types of, you know, crops and plants that these ancient civilizations were using. And, you know, as we know, most people didn't, or like early brewers and civilizations didn't know that you couldn't just make alcohol from water and like barley. Like there was yeast involved or some kind of wild yeast or fermentation going on. And so,
they thought it was magic.
Yeah. It's like these people probably thought they just had like this magic porridge they were making that got them a little bit buzzed.
Yeah. This makes me think like why we should do an episode of that's like talking about like how beer either saved humanity or heavily influenced humanity, because like just the processes used for safe drinking water and then the formation of civilization. There's a lot of theories out there that like without beer, nomadic civilizations may not have settled down for agriculture and done things like that. So just some interesting stuff and some interesting like historical theories that are out there. But yeah, so 13,000 years, and like Nick said, that previously it's thought like 5,000 years from some places in China and then even Egypt, some evidence of some breweries there. But 13,000 is that, and that was just like, you know, maybe 8 years ago that they discovered that. So pretty big jump back in time for that.
Yeah, and who knows, we may find further evidence that contradicts that and pushes it back farther, but...
And now the breweries that we're going to talk about, obviously, are nowhere near 13,000 years.
For perspective, that was kind of more of a side note there about, you know, history. But definitely, I think a focus now, we can kind of hone in on the continuously active breweries.
Mm-hmm. Should we crack our next beer before we jump into this list?
Oh, yes. What have we got here? I forgot the second beer.
We've got a beer. Let's see. This beer is from Gizmo Brewworks in Raleigh, North Carolina. It is their Hindsight Double New England IPA, the 2023 version. Ooh. Or I think it's the can art says 2023, but I think it's looking at 2023 in the rearview mirror is what it is. What did they say?
Did you say that's from Guillermo Brewing Company?
Guillermo.
Gizmo.
Gizmo.
Shout out to anybody who picked up on that reference.
Yes, this is an 8.4% alcohol by volume, double NEPA. And they've got a little narrative on the side of the can. It says, the tailgater on your bumper, the outfit you wore to prom, the one that got away, 2023. Sometimes it's hard not to get distracted by the negative things in the rear view. That doesn't mean the drive isn't worth it. To change your point of view, we present Hindsight. This huge IPA is as hazy as the future. Juicy and double dry hopped with Citra, Cashmere, and Kohatu hops. There will be a time to look back. For now, keep your eyes on the road ahead.
That's profound.
So motivating.
Yeah. The future is hazy.
The future is
cracked.
Cracked. Woo, hit with some stank on that one. Poured quite aggressively.
You've got a nice collar of foam, sir.
Collar? It's like a sleeve.
Sleeve of foam.
So I'm getting, like, on the nose, a mix of, like, dank notes and then also, like, juicy, kind of, like, peachy kind of vibes. It's tough to smell with all this foam going up my nose.
It is, though. It's, like, a touch of citrus, but also just, like, some stone fruits and, like, really sweet, like, juicy fruit, something like sticky sweet, like a peach, but also I'm getting some like estery notes, or maybe not. Maybe that was,
I see where you're saying. I feel like I was getting a little bit of like the that, juicy fruity,
like almost like that Belgian yeast kind of character where it's like a little bit of banana, but I think that's,
yeah, I could see. It's kind of like that mix between the two smells, but I don't know. I'm not getting any like phenolic like of those type characters.
I'm also, my nose like, is tropical, a little bit stone fruit stuffed. So,
but yeah, on a sip, this is pretty smooth, velvety. You wouldn't. I mean, the ABV's tucked away in there. It's not obvious.
Mm. It's really bright though. It packs a punch.
Yeah, it is.
Mouthfeel, it's like really crisp and carbonated.
Mm-hmm. It's a little like citrusy. I don't know. It's like just very kind of tropical to me. Nice, like lighter body too. Nothing real heavy.
Mm-hmm.
No perceived bitterness is pretty low.
Yeah, definitely really smooth for, what's it, 8.4, 8.5?
Yeah, 8.4. Nice. Yeah, this is a good one. Saw it, had to have it, grabbed it. You know, this is just like they used to brew back in 1040.
Yeah, these heavy-hitting, hoppy, hazy IPAs. Double
New England IPAs. Back then, it was like, not even, it's like future England, they called it.
New England?
New England.
There's not even a current England.
We're speaking old English in New England.
Old English.
Oh, man. But yeah, so actually they weren't speaking old English because they were in Germany.
They're speaking old German.
Old German. So topping off this list and starting out, I think you'll find there's a lot of controversy if you look this up because there's a question of, were they continuously operating? Where are the records? You know, did they close? Have the breweries changed hands? You know, what's really going on at this site? And a lot of them will be, maybe there was records of brewing at this facility, mm-hmm. and then it was bought a million times. But the first one on our list is one you've probably heard of. It's Weinstephaner, or Bavarian State Brewery Weinstephan, which is the full name, but established in 1040. So wow. They'll be having their 1,000-year anniversary in a mere 16 years here.
What would that be? What would a 1,000-year anniversary be? That's a centennial? No, it's centennial, it's 100, so
yeah.
A millennial?
I don't even know. Yeah, it must be.
Our millennial anniversary.
Yeah, wow. A millennial. Dang, the millennials will be there the millennial.
Yo, brew, this beer is awesome, fam. No cap.
That's Gen Z, dog.
Nope, wrong gen.
No cap, bussin'.
I can't even get the generations right. That's how out of touch I am.
Oh, man, but yeah. So, this one is, I think it's a little easier to trace the history because it was like a monastic brewery. You know, find a couple on this list are, you know, old monks brewing away beer in their monasteries as a way to support themselves.
Yeah.
But, so, former Benedictine monastery for about 300 years, and then was officially touted as a brewery, and then went about 400 more years, you know, during that time, went through a lot of stuff, you know, had a rough life. Lots of fires.
It's plagues, really sad.
An earthquake. you know, the plague just came through, yeah. You know, like whatever, and just kept having to rebuild. They went through the Rhein-Heizgebot in about 1500s, and then the monastery actually ended up dissolving in the 1800s, but the brewery remained, kept going, and then the state basically kind of acquired it And so now that's why it's the Bavarian State Brewery, Weinstephan. Weinstephan, though, you can get it.
Oh, yeah.
Good beer. Classic. Wheat beer, classic. I remember having this in college. There was in Albany, there was a beer garden, Wolf's Beer Garden, and they had several of the breweries on this list, actually, their beers. Weinstephaner. Yeah. Classic.
Yeah, and they still have, you know, just such a historical place in beer, I think, and especially with being a former monastery. They also have still, I believe, some education going on there for brewmasters to kind of make the trek to Germany and go to Weinstephan and kind of learn sort of traditional brewing techniques. And it almost seems to me like it'd be kind of a spot, like a pilgrimage for a really big beer enthusiast, you know, to kind of go there. It'd be a really expensive trip. And I know they do tours and such, but it also, the location is beautiful. It sits on this like big hilltop and kind of looks out, over the countryside, and you know, they just have such a historical, it's funny calling it like a historical place there because it's been rebuilt so many times over the last almost 1,000 years. So it's not even the same building it once was, you know, the monastery had to be reformed over and over again. But I think it's a good tale of like perseverance too. Like,
oh, yeah.
They almost wouldn't be on this list if they had just kind of been like, you know, after the third plague, we're just going to hang them up and not brew beer here anymore. Yeah. But you know, the monks were like, no, we're gonna build it one more time. This is the time it's gonna stand.
One more time.
Yeah, shortly behind that, though.
A mere 10 years later.
10 years, which is, you wouldn't think that big a deal, but when you're talking almost 1,000 years, it's like, dang, they were that close. So, Weltenberger Kloster Brewery, which was established in 1050 in Bavaria, so another Bavarian-based brewery there. So they were a monastery, the Weltenberg Abbey, which opened in around 600. So they actually opened their monastery before Weinstephan's monastery was founded. So they actually have the claim to fame of being the oldest monastery brewery in active, I guess, brewing. So as we know, Weinstephan, they closed the abbey part of their brewery, and so they're strictly now a brewery. So we do have the continuation of the monastery. And I think they said there's still 7 Benedictine monks active at the monastery. Oh, wow. So not a large group, but they're still carrying on that part of their history and being a monastery brewery. So also another really cool location. I was looking up on like Google Maps. They're right on the banks of the Danube River. And so they have like this beautiful kind of like waterfront property and just looks gorgeous there. And I don't remember reading a lot about them having the same issues with location burning and disaster down and tribulation. So they kind of lucked out, I think, as far as not having to rebuild as many times or at all that I can tell. But they've obviously grown and they've became a pretty well-known brewery in Bavaria. But I just don't think they have the same like household recognition that Weinstephan does, which is interesting to me because they were founded as a brewery 10 years apart and almost 1,000 years ago. So
yeah,
I just don't think I see as much of the Weltenberger Kloster beers in the U.S. anyway.
No, and what I was reading about it too is that there's a little less documentation about their continuous operation. But still, I mean, they've got that monastic history over time. Next up on our list, you know, we've got kind of a cluster of early, you know, very early things.
Very early.
And this is, we're talking 1070. So they've got a little while to their 1,000th anniversary. But this is Aflehem, I think. Is that how you say it? Aflehem?
Aflehem, yeah.
Aflehem, yeah.
Spelled with a G, but it's, brewery. I guess it's a Dutch pronunciation. So,
yeah. So this was founded in a city that I cannot pronounce because it has very few vowels. Opwijk, Belgium. I'm not going to attempt to
Belgian
to say it, but you know, this brewery has had a very rough go of things. I think it's a lesson learned for anybody that's wanting to open up their own brewery. Make sure you don't choose a strategic military location when you are. They've had a lot of things going on in their history. Their continuous operation, I think, is one of the biggest things that's been challenged for their age because they've been through, you know, many wars, They've been occupied as like a hilltop, like battle location that's caused them to close and reopen and close and reopen. With the latest being in 1940, when the Nazis made them hand over all of their copper brewing equipment and everything. So in 1940, the Abbey's brewery like shut down, and that was kind of the end of things for brewing operations at Athlehem. But the brewer and monks associated with it, you know, they teamed up with, what was it called? Dischmet Brewing. And basically kind of oversaw the brewing for a little while, then just turned the recipe over and kind of oversee it from there. So they've been going still, but now they're owned by Heineken. So kind of a lot of things going on.
As breweries tend to do after you've been open for almost 1,000 years.
Get acquired by Heineken.
Yeah. Yeah, that was interesting to me that they had been purchased by Heineken. Again, because a name that, you know, on this list, I feel like I just don't see their product. It's not as much of a household name, but, you know, clearly Heineken was looking to kind of expand with their Belgian portfolio.
I think they really were just looking for a strategic military location.
It's all about location.
Location, location, location.
Yeah, I feel so bad for them, like, to have lost the equipment the way that they did.
Yeah.
You just got mined for copper, basically.
The Nazis stole our brewing equipment.
Imagine this was, like, a pitch you had to make to your insurance adjusters. Like, yeah, so a bunch of Nazis came in and they took our equipment. Okay, yeah, sure. The Nazis just waltz out with your copper brewing equipment. I've heard that before.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so now we're kind of out of the 11th century, and we're moving forward a little bit to the 13th century. The next one we found that has some pretty high credibility for its established date was the Bulten Brewery. So this was also in Germany. Going back to Germany, this is founded in Korschenbroich, if I'm saying that correctly. So the lordship of Meilendonk granted Heinrich the Brewer, or Heinrich de Brouwer, the right to brew at the Krasshof. And so they opened up this brewery in 1266 in Korschenbroich. And what they're most known for is their alt beers. And so it kind of was a really big step away from the common brewing types at the time, at least in the 13th century. So the step away, they went for like a top fermenting yeast, which was not common for, you know, as we know, lagers tend to be bottom fermenting and they have these cooler lagering temperatures. And so the alt beer using that top fermenting yeast and, you know, having a different fermentation going on, they end up with these different colored beers that were of a different bitterness and they had different characters. So these end up having a step away from that kind of clean beer from a, you know, a clean lager taste. Now they have a bit of like an estuary or a fruity character in some cases. And they have a darker kind of copper red hue.
They're the first hazy boys, you know what I'm saying?
They're haze boys. And then, so they're, that claim to fame, I think, is pretty notable for them. And I think they're pretty proud of that because if you go anywhere on Bulten's like websites or in their kind of history, they mention, you know, they're the kind of the oldest alt beer or alt brewer, depending where you look, alt beer brewery in the world, still going. Ooh, so
that just made me want some copper alt beer from Old Mecklenburg.
Old Mecklenburg, yeah.
That's a good one. Copper.
Yeah, Old Mecklenburg's really good at like hitting those chef's classic kiss. German styles.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they kind of stayed on that path and they were pretty small. Like their operation never really expanded super wide. I think they had a desire to keep small and keep their kind of values and traditions intact. So even though they kind of got passed down from generation to generation, they, you know, taught the next descendants like their practice and it got handed down in a way where they were able to maintain some integrity there. But pretty recently, actually, in the early 2000s, Michael Holman was an entrepreneur in Germany who had worked in the beer industry and had owned or was CEO of several large like beverage companies. And he became like a co-owner or a large partner of Bulten Brewery. And, you know, I think from a lot of perspectives, it was probably widely believed that he was going to kind of come in and from his background, he might disrupt the, you know, that kind of small but, and you know, true traditional nature of the brewery. But he's maintained a desire to keep up with the traditions of Bolton, and they want to keep the history strong and alive. And so he's kind of committed to that approach. And so far, things have been able to kind of stay on par with where they are, and, you know, haven't really deviated into a desire to maybe grow into this giant conglomerate or to get merged or bought out by a, you know, a larger company like AB InBev or Heineken. So,
yeah. What's next? Ooh, actually, we kind of skipped around a little bit. This next one was 1229. We had our order list out of order, but we got Brauerei Hofstetten Kramer. But
it's got a little bit of a caveat.
Is it for real? Yeah. Is it? Did we really hop around? Wow, this is the oldest brewery in Austria, originally believed to be a tavern and restaurant with a Pibberstein family. But the year 1449 is noted as the year when Hofstetten first had a brewery mentioned at the land register in the district of Austria they were in. So, kind of some, you know, questionable history.
Yeah.
Was it 1400s? Or was it 1229?
Yeah. To me, it's like, it seems like one of those cases where the owners, or the, you know, kind of the current owners of this brewery, of course, it's more fun and it's more of a notable feat to say that you were founded in the 1200s versus the 1400s. Mm-hmm. So they're going to kind of hold on to any scrap of information or any kind of ledger data they can that would support them. But even the Guinness Book of World Records doesn't recognize the 1229 date. They recognize the 1449 date.
Yeah.
So,
and I mean, if you're thinking documentation, like, that's the thing, is written documentation, you know, record keeping probably wasn't the greatest then. So who knows what actually happened?
I have to question the authenticity of that process too.
They weren't, like, you know, saving their logbooks in their Excel files.
Yeah.
But, you know, so kind of at age, it seems like a long time, but even 1400s is quite a long time.
Yeah. And one thing I thought was kind of funny was, like, the name now includes the Hofstetten Kramer name. So the Kramer family, the way that they got into this brewery was through basically the current owners of Hofstetten not having sufficient funds to pay for a livestock exchange. So this man, Casper Kramer, came and was like, "Oh, you don't have money for this cow? I guess I'll take your brewery." So the rights basically got passed over. And so now the Hofstetten Kramer Brewery, which has been in that family since 1847, I believe. So, when in doubt, just make sure you've got money to pay your debtors, or else they'll take your brewery.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is how easy it was.
Don't build on a strategic military location. Don't forget to pay for your cows. That's the lessons we've learned so far.
Yeah. Couldn't they just refuse the cow? Like, "Oh, we don't have money for that. Just never mind."
Yeah. 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 I don't think we want that cow now.
It took me 8 weeks to get here.
You're taking the damn cow.
Taking the cow.
Taking a cow.
Yeah. So now we're looking to Munich, Germany. And, you know, Munich is a town rich, of course, in brewing history, and people travel there for Oktoberfest. So you might recognize the name Augustiner, because that's one of the six breweries that serves at Oktoberfest. And
I thought you were going to say because they love the month of August.
If you're an Augustiner.
Augustiner.
Dost thou know of Augustina Burns Red?
Yeah. no one's going to get that.
Yeah, that was just for our enjoyment. But yeah, so Augustiner Brewery was established in 1328, according to their most old records, in Munich. So it's the oldest private brewery in Munich, and it was founded within an Augustinian monastery. Kind of ran that way for several centuries until 1803. And once again, the state took over and, you know, secularization occurred. The monastery was basically dissolved, and it was a state-owned brewery in Munich at the time. But It was once again privatized by Anton Wagner in 1829. And ever since then, it's been a private brewery. And so, yeah, they definitely have a high distinction and high pedigree in Munich as being, for one, the oldest private brewery in Munich, but also, you know, having a kind of a flagship name in Oktoberfest celebrations.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It was great. They're, yeah, I really enjoyed that tent.
You went to that tent? Yeah, mm-hmm. I was going to say.
And they were all, they just back there just... Bam, tapping all those kegs.
Oh, yeah.
Hammering the big just old barrels. It was great. Yeah.
Yeah, we're looking forward. We're going to make our first trip this year.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Yeah, and then, you know, we kind of end this. I mean, a lot of this is kind of in Bavaria and, like, yeah. Munich or München.
München.
I don't know. My German accent's so I've been... I've been doing my studying.
Gotta go and Duolingo again.
I've been looking at Spanish lately, trying to... But I've also not been doing that very diligent either. But yeah, so we're back in Munich for our, you know, our next one, which is... It's kind of a conglomerate, per se, but I think we'll focus a little bit on one of them. But it's the Spaten Franziskaner Lohenbräu Group, which also... The other huge presence within Oktoberfest. Really, the only thing we're missing is Hofbräu.
Yeah.
But, you know, Spaten really has a kind of a decently documented history. And if you check out their website, you know, they kind of tell you about their tax history. They've got actually a tax book from the city of Munich showing a brewer at the property where Spaten Brewery is back in 1397. So not quite as old as Augustiner, but... pretty old. It's gone through, you know, several changes and, you know, owned by a few families, but really not like major changes within that time period.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, until they merged with the Franziskaner and Lohenbräu group, who then, since then, had been purchased by AB InBev, you know, kind of joining a big conglomerate, but...
So really, Bud Light is at Oktoberfest.
Yeah. So you're telling me that all of this is Bud Light?
Oh, my gosh.
No!
Which tent do you want to get your Bud Light at?
Can you imagine if they just started serving Bud Light at that?
Oh my gosh. Why go?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, they kind of merged together, but we're still in that 1300s, pre-1400 period. Crazy. Crazy times.
Yeah. And it's funny, that trajectory of that brewery, I think was... I mean, we could talk about Weihenstephan having the... disaster, catastrophe, strike, left and right. That was its own trouble. But this one, they went through so many different like passings of family ownership to then like merging. And it's like the trajectory of Spaten is such an interesting story. It's like a long story. If you go through like their tax records, if you mm-hmm. go through the different family sellings and ownership and, but somehow made it through, and now they're part of the Spaten Franziskaner Lohenbräu group. I think they've kind of started to abbreviate that a little bit to make it easier, but yeah, interesting. I saw, and I don't know why it's done that way, but it says that Spaten and Lohenbräu are like separate as far as how they're viewed at Oktoberfest. Like they each serve beers, and it's like, I guess if it's part of like a group, but the brands still have their own identity,
their
and
own
property,
separate.
Then that makes sense. But you would think they just have like they have one representation, but it's they're both representing separately. So
yeah. And fun fact for all the non-German speakers, Spaten means spade, and if you look at the logo, it's like a shovel head or a spade head, and you're just like, oh, okay, very literal. Named very after little. The Spot family.
Spot, yeah, S-P-A-T.
T.
Two T's. S-P-A-T-T.
Who owned it from 1622 to 1704. So not even the most recent
really?
Family.
Yeah. And not a very long time in the grand scheme mm-hmm. of things.
Yeah, less than 100 years. But yeah. So, I mean, you want to talk about U.S.?
Yeah, I figured it's worth talking about, you know, even though this is not the oldest brewery as far as maybe even top 10 or top 20 in the world, it's definitely the oldest in the United States, so there's some relevance there, but some of you probably know this. Yuengling, or as it's appropriately known, D.G. Yangling and Son, which is named after the founder and his son, who they partnered together to...
It wasn't his son. It was some other guy's son.
Yeah. Hey, just, son, come here. You want to be a co-owner of a brewery? So this dates back to the 1800s. 1829 was when David Gottlieb Jungling came to Pottsville, Pennsylvania as a German immigrant. When he first started off in 1828, actually, is when he opened the first brewery. It was known as Eagle Brewery. And so you'll notice eagles are in the logos of a lot of Yangling now still. Kind of maybe a little bit of a callback there. But the following year, changed the name from Eagle Brewery to D.G. Yangling and Son. Went into business. Actually, no, sorry, it was 1873 when they changed the name to D.G. Yangling. But yeah, so they were around since the early 1800s. And as you might know with history, there was a thing called Prohibition that we've talked about before. And so they were right in the middle of that. And they were actually able to survive that by making near beers. And I think you talked about that with one of the New York breweries did that too, didn't they?
Yeah, FX Matt Brewery. FX Matt. Which, looking up the list of oldest breweries, I thought it would be on there, but it is like barely
scratching
not. Yeah, there's a list by Thrillist that shows the 11, and their list ends at like 1870. Let's see what year. 1873, and FX Matt was in 1888.
So they just missed the
missed the cutoff. But yeah, they did near beer as well to survive Prohibition.
Yeah, and in addition to that, they also made ice cream, which I saw that they started doing, I think, around the late 1800s, and they did it through Prohibition. So those two products kind of were able to keep them afloat, but they discontinued the ice cream until actually in the last 10 years or so. I think it was like 2014, they brought back Yingling ice cream. I've never seen it, so I'm not sure where it's available, but I'm not really sure, sure what to make of that, if it's just...
See, when I drive home from here, I go past the Yingling Brewery, but it's always at like 7 a.m.
Never at a time conducive to drinking.
Yeah. Or like really late at night, because it's always, you know, kind of half like getting to where we're driving. But
yeah. Also weird to think about Yingling as like a craft brewery or like an independent brewery, but I mean, it is by definition. It's just because of the way that their product line is set and, you know, the way we kind of think of them. In the grocery store, they're like grouped in the same shelf space or like cooler spaces.
It's the macros.
AB InBev and stuff. But I mean, they make a wider variety of beers than you might know. They just don't always sell them at the, you know, the widely distributed options are typically their, you know, normal Yangling, the Yangling Light. They do the
Black and
Yangling,
Tan.
Black and Tan, yep. So there are some options available. One.
Yeah, they got a whole Flight, whole bunch, yeah.
And they also have that chocolate, Hershey chocolate one.
Yeah,
so, because they're really close to Hershey, Pennsylvania. So really easy to kind of incorporate those two local businesses that have a deep history in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Yeah. And every once in a while, you get a nice tingling for a Yingling.
Always.
Just to round out the quick, like, oldest five. Number two is F&M Schaefer Brewing, 1842, founded in New York, which I don't really have it. I had it before, so
yeah,
I know. Pabst is number three, though. 1844, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. If you don't know Pabst Blue Ribbon, do you even wear cuffed jeans and a flannel? I don't know.
Man, if that wasn't your first legal beer, then what were you doing?
What are you even doing? But yeah, Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Pabst.
Classic. Always a good go-to option. Number four is Minhas Craft Brewery in Monroe. 1845, 1 year later. Wow. Number five is Anheuser-Busch. St. Louis, Missouri, 1852.
So they were not even, I mean, like 21 years behind when Yingling's brewery opened in 1829. So
yeah,
there really was quite the rush once, you know. And granted, these are active, and so, you know, you have to factor in. There's probably some that opened up earlier than 1829 that
ton of them did not survive Prohibition.
That's so probably, that's, yeah. That's a good way to weed out the weaklings.
And then just the mass consolidation that happened over time. So,
as things tend to do in the U.S. and the world.
In the world. In the world.
Yeah, and so, man, this last one is just for fun because, you know, I think we often think of some... If you think of a list in your head and you haven't done a lot of reading, which... was me before the last few days. So you're not alone. But you might think of like old breweries. What comes to mind? Some of the classic names that might pop into your head include Guinness in Ireland. And I think of that as being like, oh, it's probably one of the oldest breweries. But something actually predates Guinness, and that's Smittick's Brewery. As far as the oldest, it has rights to the oldest brewery in Ireland. So they were founded in 1710 in Kilkenny. And while they were later acquired by Guinness in 1965, that brand is now, it holds the title of being the oldest continuously active brewery in Ireland. And actually now Guinness was bought by Diageo, which is a London-based alcoholic beverage corporation. And so they kind of have since been like bought out more than once, but that brand is still really recognizable. That kind of Smittick's red beer. If you're at an Irish pub, that's kind of like your second option next to a Guinness on draft if you're looking for a traditional Irish pub fare.
I haven't had a Smittick's in quite some time. Maybe we'll have to make sure to get one. Let's go to H.A. McMurphy's and get one.
I wonder if they do have them there. Because I feel like most Irish pubs like will carry Guinness, but they don't carry some of the other Kilkenny-based beers. Like a Smittick's is, to me, like, I think the last one I had at a Smittick's was in Sacramento last summer. Mm. We just went to this little pub and they actually had it.
Also known as the American Ireland.
Sacramento, the American Ireland. Most people don't know that, but
most people, yeah. Little known fact.
Yeah.
There's a second Blarney Stone.
Lick the stone.
Oh, no, speaking of which, that's not this coming weekend, but the next weekend.
Oh yeah, St. Patrick's Day is coming up. So maybe we will get a Smittick's and we'll kiss the stone. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Until next time.
Will they find the stone?
He's going Super Saiyan for 3 episodes.
Going Super Smittick's.
Oh man.
Well, Elsie's not here.
She's not here, but
she's here in spirit.
She's here in spirit. And not in spirits as in liquor, but she got us a beer.
Time for Elsie's pick of the week.
And I guess you'll have to assume the position and I'll crack it. And
yeah, this is always
the beer is still shrouded in mystery. Only the top of the can is out. Because she's using her little fancy koozie.
She thought of everything.
I just have to look at the beer as it pours out, so I don't make a big fat mess.
Just pour until you hear it hit the glass, and then you know you've hit the sweet spot.
Until it hits the glass.
It's just pouring all over the floor. Oh, oh, there's the glass. I heard it.
Perfect.
Okay.
Okay.
Looks like we're staying in Hopsville.
Oh, but it's different. Hoppy, but different. Definitely got a dry hop vibe too, though.
Yeah, really fragrant. Getting maybe more citrus this time around.
Yeah.
Again, I'm having a little congested still.
Maybe like a little bright floral too. I'm not really getting like piney resinous notes though.
No, it's like soft, floral, kind of sweet.
And I had a lot of foam in mine. I just took a little sip of just foam. And
Wait a minute. That taste was not what I was expecting.
No, it's not. A lot more muted and mild.
It's, yeah, really muted. It's like, I don't know what to make of this.
Oh, I may know what this is based off of our recent trip.
Oh.
That was there purchasing some.
Oh my gosh, I looked and it's clear. It's golden, straw colored, clear. Wow.
I won't say anything. I don't want to ruin it. I want to see where you get, but I think I have a good idea of what this
But
might
on the
be.
Nose, I feel like I'm smelling hop character. And when I'm tasting it, it's like so much more clean tasting.
Super clean. This is a very good looking beer. Nice in a glass. This is like you could put this in an advertisement. An advertisement.
This baffles me, how my nose can smell something, but I'm tasting something that doesn't seem to match.
Yeah.
Like, usually there's some difference, and there's kind of a flux of character between the nose and the flavor, but this is like, it's like I'm smelling and tasting two different beers. I don't understand how that works.
Yeah, it's like slightly sweet, slightly bitter, bit citrusy, floral.
Okay. I'm getting, it's getting a little more of that hop flavor the more I'm drinking. Like the first couple of sips though, it was like, I don't want to say bland, but it was just like the character was so muted and it just tasted like a very clean, malty beer, like Pilsner-ish.
Mm-hmm. Pilsner-ish.
But now, like,
I was getting more lager than Pilsner.
Yeah, I'm getting a little more lager than Pilsner. Oh, so good. So, let's think. What is, like, I don't think it's like a dry hop lager, but there are some lagers that have pronounced hop character. Oh, geez. Gonna look like an idiot. Thanks a lot, Lauren.
This is good. I like it.
I didn't think I was gonna like it the first couple sips, and then I continued to sip on it, and I'm like, okay, this is crushable. If you want a light beer, but also that has some more profound character than just a, I don't say just a Pilsner, but.
Confirmed my suspicions.
Hmm.
This is one I picked out. That's why I knew. I hadn't tasted it yet.
Is it like a, is it an IPL or is it, oh no, I don't think it's hoppy enough for that. Maybe a Czech Pilsner?
It is.
Oh.
It is. It's a brewery we went to.
New Anthem?
No.
Edward Teach?
No.
Okay, what is it?
Just Flying Machine.
Flying Brewing. Machine.
Flying Machine Brewing.
Okay.
It is Escape from Lager Mountain, but not their regular Escape from Lager Mountain, which is a rice lager. This is Escape from Lager Mountain, dry hopped rice lager.
It was a dry hopped
Citra lager. And Hallertauer. Mittelfrü.
Interesting.
So that's kind of where we're getting some of those floral notes. And citrusy with Citra. That's kind of funny.
Yep.
I didn't know what hops it was. I knew it was dry hopped rice lager, but yeah, Citra and Hallertauer. So,
well, so our nose didn't really lie to us, but I think what's interesting is that the rice lager base kind of just made a canvas for the hops to be like, here's what I am.
But
then you taste it, you actually taste the lager part of it.
Yeah.
Because like lagers don't have often a ton of aroma to give. So that's actually a really cool way to like accentuate hops. Like here's a blank canvas basically.
Yeah. And super, I mean, this is pretty good. It's like very unique. Like the aroma is like, that's a nice combo. I don't think I've seen many combos of Citra and Hallertauer. You know, the noble hops and American hops mixed together. But nice choice. I mean, it makes sense because you got a lager, so put in some noble hops, then kick things up a notch.
Just kick it up a notch.
Just kick it up a notch.
Let's Americanize this thing.
If you're not putting Citra in your Hallertau, what are you even doing?
Can you look at yourself in the mirror?
Can you? For real?
How do you sleep at night?
What's wrong with you? But Flying Machine, yeah, I guess we only stopped at New Anthem when we said we went to Wilmington, but we went to New Anthem, then went to Edward Teach, then we went to Fly Trap, and then on day went to Bill's, and then went to Flying Machine before we had to go home. Wanted to go to Wilmington Brewing, as well, but we needed some food, so Bill's, we ended up going instead.
That's a solid trip, though. I mean, packed in a lot of good spots and...
Quick little time, little man.
Yeah.
You know,
he was a trooper.
Stuck with us, kept trying to grab beers. That's his biggest thing. He's, like, trying to grab all the beers.
Oh, yeah.
I got some funny pictures that's, like, you could put up me and be, like, get someone who looks at you the way Owen looks at beers. Because, like, he's, like, staring at him.
Yeah. What can you say? The man knows what he likes.
The hardest thing is that his bedtime's at, like, 7, so...
You've got
to
get home.
Way to go back to the hotel at 7.
Well, that's why you just get those cans to go.
Mm-hmm. That's what we had cracked in. We only have 2 of those porch lights because we cracked into some of those. And
oh, yeah. He goes to sleep, and you guys just crush a few beers.
Passed out watching Aquaman.
The new on HBO. One?
This, yeah, the new one.
Oh, new one, yeah.
I don't really know what happened. I was out for it, but...
I think people that saw the whole movie don't know what happened.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the general gist I got when I was like, interesting. I feel like I don't really watch too many of the superhero movies anymore because they're all kind of just...
Meh.
Yeah, they're, I don't know. The plots have...
I'm just waiting for...
Disappeared.
The Batman Part 2, which is like 2025. Amazing. Next October, I think, so...
Amazing plots. We were packing up the thing and Wall-E was on. And I was like, I gotta watch Wall-E again. So I watched Wall-E on Sunday night. I'm like, such a good movie. Like,
you know, I don't think I've ever actually seen all of Wall-E.
Oh, it's great. It's so good.
Isn't it like kind of sad though?
It is a little times like, you're like, ooh.
It gets really existential. It's just like.
But then in the end, it's all good. Everything works out.
Wall-E.
And
then is it Eva? Or
yeah, Eve.
Eve.
But he says Eva. It's like earth, vegetation, I can't remember what it is. It's like vegetation, something or other, where she's like, you know, because her unit is like looking for plants, evaluator or something like that.
Yeah. Eve.
But yeah, great movie, classic. But that wraps up our movie podcast.
All about Pixar, great movies.
Talk about Pixar films. Speaking of films, Dune 2.
I gotta go see it.
I've rewatched the first one. It was on Netflix until the 29th.
Hmm.
We rewatched it. I also read the book.
Yeah, I knew you'd read the book.
There's multiple books, but I think this one's just based off the first.
It's a pretty hefty read, isn't it?
Oh, gosh. It's one of those books that there's like a million names and characters of, you know, and like places. And
it's crazy.
You're like...
Trying to keep up with that is...
The first movie has a few changes from the book, like, in character adaptations and, like, the way some scenes play out. But,
okay.
I mean, it's nothing that detracts from the story too much. It's just, I think it was convenience in, like, trying to wrap it all up in a semi-reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
Because it's still, like, 2.5-hour movie or something like that, but...
Yeah. Well, they I guess... Now that it'll be close to 5 hours of total runtime with the two movies,
yeah,
so
yeah,
that's probably pretty reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, they made The Hobbit into like 3 movies, and I was like, The Hobbit's not that big of a book. Like, I don't think it needed 3 separate movies.
The whole series has like the movie, and then The Hobbit's like, one more!
Yeah.
It's like the shortest book, but it's...
Yeah, I was like, if they're going to do that, they better make it like, every detail should be included if they're going to break it down, but...
Yeah. Yeah.
I also haven't seen The Hobbit, so I'm just talking.
I haven't really seen The Hobbit, yeah. We watched all the Lord of the Rings movies, not The Hobbit, but those. And I was thinking, we got to watch Star Wars again. Go through. Well, that really wraps up our movie podcast here. Secondary Fermentation, episode number 76. Thanks for checking it out. If you want to get in touch with us, Gmail, eastcarolinabeer@gmail.com. Instagram, we've changed our handle. It's @secondaryfermentation.
Hey.
Facebook, I think we're still East Carolina Beer and Brewing. You know, Twitter, X, whatever it is. Not really X. On that anymore. We're still in the threads. But Instagram, Gmail, best way to get in touch with us. Make sure to leave a nice, fat, 5-star review. Send all your love. Send all of your hate. Pass it to your friends. Don't tell anybody about it. Whatever you want to do. We'll see you in the next episode.
Keep it a secret.
Keep it a secret. It'll be our little secret. if you made it this far. But thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you in episode 77. Cheers.
Cheers.